Ningisida, the Egyptian god Thoth, the god of knowledge, according to Egypt. Ningisida is the god of many things in Mesopotamia. DNA, and he's the architect of all the monuments, the great monuments that have lasted thousands of years. Ningisida's hands is in just about every ancient thing you see. There's much to say about him. And before we get into the slideshows and so forth, scroll down to Ningisida overview. It's important that we go over this a little bit. The first thing you see when you get to the overview is on the left is a picture of Ningisida with the foundation peg. That's what that stake is. It's a foundation peg which the architect Ningisida sets out for all the ziggurats and all the pyramids. You're talking about Ningisida as the architect and who moved all those stones and so forth. That I'm not sure. But I know he designed the pyramid. He laid the foundation pegs. I know that at one time Marduk was imprisoned in the Great Pyramid with the intention of him being entombed there, dying there. That's Nergal's or Ninurta's work during the wars. One that he lost, retreated to the Great Pyramid. They tried to seal him in and figure he's gone. Because Ningisida, the architect and brother to Marduk, who's imprisoned there, because he is the designer of that, he knew a secret passage in. And by doing so, he allowed his brother, older brother Marduk, to escape. Saved his life. Marduk is back on the loose, thanks to Ningisida. Anyway, the picture on the right, you'll see Ningisida with a giant mixed breed, semi-divine demigod, who becomes the heroes of old, men of renown, according to the Bible, which means they're the first kings. You can see the way they have his hair, and everything is different than the gods. And the gods, especially the royal family, gods of the royal family, which this is all about, the history here, the ancient history left to us by the gods. It's all about the gods of the royal family. And they were the crown of animal horns. You can see when you look at Ningisida, he's got a tall crown of animal horns. And just exactly how many rings depends upon something, and I'm not sure what that is. But it seems that the more rings you have of animal horns, the more important you are. And the lesser important might be sitting with one ring of animal horns. So you might see a dad with just one ring or so, and here is Ningisida with, what, four, possibly five? So these artifacts are important, and once you understand what they're doing, they become very important, because what you're looking at is a recorded scene in history. Now, when you also look at this picture on the right, that is a cylinder seal. That's a rock that's been carved and shaved and smoothed down to a round cylinder. Who's doing that work? I ask. And then this cylinder is reverse carved. Who can imagine a negative image? And then carve it perfectly on a rock that's round. What? Ancient man could not do this, and then have the scene turn out perfectly. I mean, how many mistakes and slips or whatever, how many of these would be thrown away to finally get one? It's just the opposite. There are tens of thousands of these things that have been found. And when you roll it on wet clay, look at this scene. That is an ancient recorded event. This event can be printed over and over and over and be handed out to all the city states. So in Uruk, they found out what happened in Bad Tibera through one of these. There's the story. Now, most of them would also have a text that this would belong to. Okay, so what you're looking at here anyway is the goddess on the left is Ninsun, and with her hands in adoration because the giant mixed breed is her son. Ninsun married a giant mixed breed and had children by him, and three of them became very important kings. This is one of them. So she presents her son to Ningazita, and you know it's Ningazita simply by looking at the snakes coming off of his shoulders. And if you had a clear vision there, it would be a horned snake. But here's Ningazita sitting on the throne. Look at the size of him. Okay, and then off behind him, you see a text. Now, I have no idea what that says. I imagine the museum does, but I'm showing you the artifact. Don't have the text translation. The little bitty image you see in the middle is Inanna, who espouses this giant mixed breed made king. You see what I'm saying? Ninsun has her mixed breed son appointed to kingship, presents him to a god for the approval, and Inanna lays in wait because if he becomes the important man around, she's going to espouse him. She marries every single important king in history and gains the reputation as the goddess of love. All this is done after her husband, Dumuzi, is killed. Anyway, and then off to the left of Ningazita, you're going to see what looks like a plus sign on a round design. You're looking at symbols of gods there. And then under that round design is a moon crescent. That's another symbol. That one's Nanners. I can go on about the symbols, and you look at the pages and you'll understand. So we start with the Ningazita overview, and Ningazita, the word means Lord of the Artifact. The artifact. Well, the wonders of the world, the artifact always ends up being the Great Pyramid. Lord of the Artifact. Then the one on the right is Ninsun and her son Guda, who is son to a mixed breed and a goddess. Anyway, it calculates 2/3 divine, and Ningazita. Now, these are all relatives. You'll see. These are all descendants, kings of somebody, and they're all giant mixed breeds, and they're taller, stronger, smarter, faster, because that's their transportation, and they live much longer. Always appointed to positions of authority over earthlings. That's where they get kingship, or that's where they get religious high priests. It all comes from these giant mixed breeds that the gods place in authority positions over the earthlings. The king takes care of the rules given to the city. The high priest takes care of the ceremonies and so forth, holidays, and at the adoration of the god that lives in that ziggurat. Every bit of this makes sense, and every bit of it we still do today. Anyway, Ningazita is Lord of the Artifact. And there are other names, for instance, in Assyrian, Master Artifact, Thoth, the god of knowledge, Hermes, that's Greek, Mercury was this Roman name, Quetzalcoatl, the Mayan, etc. He's the feathered serpent god throughout South America. And in a couple texts, he's the son of Ninazu and Ningiridu. I mean, these are all Ninazu is a descendant of Ereshkigal, Ningiridu, descendant of Enki. What I believe he is, and in some texts, is the son to Ereshkigal and Enki, instead of descendants of Ereshkigal and Enki. Okay? He's the son of the main gods, Ereshkigal, that's the goddess of the underworld, and Enki, the wisest of them all. And he has a sister, Amasimala, and you can find that in text as well. He espoused the daughter of Enki, which came about through Ninhursag. Enki has many children with his true love, Ninhursag, who happens to be his sister. Anyway, Ningazita marries Azimua. And there's the text, quote, Azimua shall marry Ningazita. Ningazita helped Enki and Ninhursag in the ever-important development of the worker race. And to do that, first, they try to mix animals to see if they can get somebody to carry the burden of the heavy rocks and do the heavy burden of digging and carrying and shifting and so forth of the mining operation. Heavy work. They wanted a beast of burden. And first, they tried to get replacement workers. Enlil denied that, Enlil being Earth Colony Commander and the next king for the planet. Anyway, they tried for replacements. They tried everything. And so finally they go on strike and they demand the king come down and solve this problem. Well, the king puts it right back to the way it was, and they're still stuck in the mines. Heavy, heavy lifting here. Enki's tired of it. His people, there are 300 of them, are complaining. It's horrible. They've been thousands of our years underground in the mines. I mean, no one would ask. You get slaves to do that, not gods. Anyway, so they're trying to make a beast of burden because Enlil will not help them, nor will King Anu be replaced. They won't send anybody from the planet to come down and replace him. So Inky starts doing things, messing around, mixing DNAs of animals, trying to create a beast of burden. You will see this coming up. Then Herzog, Inky, and Ningazita. Ningazita, his symbol is the entwined serpents. Well, take a look at your medical logo. See if you don't see a crown, meaning royal family, a staff, royal family, entwined snakes, Ningazita. All of it fits Ningazita, every bit of it. Wings, he has the ability to fly. Look at your medical logo. So it's all Ningazita because he was a DNA specialist who helped his father Inky and his aunt Ninhursag create a new species of workers. Very important. We'll go over that. He's the architect of the ziggurats, the astronomical clocks that you see all over the world, you know, like Stonehenge and so, the monuments. He's the architect. He has many temples in different places. A temple is a dwelling. It's a house. And if he's visiting, you know, say, Lagash, his temple is such and such, I won't even pronounce it, which means house, outer wall. If his motel or private residence in another town, Geshbana, House of Geshbana, they call it. He's got one, and this is a main one, a temple residence in Babylon, where his older brother Marduk is, just like he lived in Egypt, where his older brother Ra is. Marduk, Ra, Thoth, Ningazita. So he's always there supporting his older brother and his father, and here he is, temple residence in Babylon, called House of Exalted Chamberlain. He has a seat in Ezagil, which is Marduk's ziggurat in Babylon. That's where Marduk lives, in the Ezagil. Okay, then there's another one, House of Truth, temple residence in Ur. I mean, Ningazita is welcomed anywhere. And when he comes to town, he's going to stay more than a day. He has his private residence that the other god had built for him, such as in Babylon, Marduk had built for him his own residence, just like Marduk went out of his way to do outrageous buildings for and private entrances for Inanna to come into Babylon. That's another story. Inanna never came. Let's see here. Here you go into other things. As you go down the overview, more temples, more buildings, more monuments. Oh, by the way, on the Sphinx, the original face to the Sphinx, people believe was Ningazita, the architect. Then they say Marduk modified that face once Ningazita, or Thoth, picked up some Africans and moved to the Yucatan. Once Ningazita is gone from Egypt, Marduk changes the face to his son's face, Osiris. Okay? Anyway, Ningazita, he is the god who founded the Olmecs, the civilization, which is the very first in South America. They were blacks from Africa. What? The very first civilization in South America were the Olmecs. We will take a look at the Olmecs. Then, of course, the Mayans and the others that came later, and of course, their time clocks and everything else that was given to them through knowledge was given through the gods and all directed by Ninguzita, because this is his domain. Okay, that's a pretty good overview just to give you some concept of who he is. Back to his page. The slideshow starts off and you see Ninguzita with his snakes in different situations, whether he's bringing Ninsun's mixed breed son before a god, perhaps his father Inki, he may bring Gouda, or he'll be with other gods. So this is a time when the gods walked with man, when the gods came down to earth, colonized the earth, created a worker race, saw that the worker race's women developed nicely. Most all of these gods, workers, have no women and have no replacements. So through this worker race, they get replacements and they discover they can take women. And by taking these women, they create the heroes of old, men of renown. The Bible calls them the Nephilim. They're just simply giant mixed breed demigods, half alien giants who came to earth and half earthlings, modified earthlings that they fashioned. It's a lot to comprehend. So anyway, you go through Ninguzita and you'll see, giant mixed breed earthling kings. You can tell they're skinheads. They look much different. The gods have the crown of horns. Now, the high priest would be a skinhead. The king could be both the high priest and the king. So as you go through these, you see there indeed are some nice artifacts of Ninguzita with the giants that were once upon the earth. So the Bible tells you they were on the earth in those days and the days after, when the sons of God came down and had sex with the daughters of men. They had children by them, and they became the heroes of old, men of renown. Straight out of Genesis 6. So, it's important. That's why this website exists. That's why you never see it all put together. Somebody, a whole group of somebodies, has kept this information from mankind for thousands of years. And then there are religions and governments. And, of course, the zealots who want this destroyed. For example, ISIS, when they were running around through the Middle East, they went through the museums. They destroyed these. Then they went to the ancient sites and blew them up. We're talking about knowledge they never wanted you to know that is being presented to you here. This is secret knowledge that's been protected for a couple thousand years. While churches get rich, governments get strong, zealots become zealots, and so on. War becomes war. It all comes from these people, or these gods. Okay, so as we leave Ninguzita's slideshow and scroll down, there's some quotes. But take a look at this picture. There you're seeing artifacts being discovered in the dirt. Some of them are discovered more organized than this, but the point is, these cities and this history was buried on purpose. And they survived for thousands of years, and we've got them. The world has these things. This knowledge has been there for a long time. And been kept secret. So there it is being discovered probably in the mid-1800s, you know, or late 1800s. Being you got a photograph, who knows what year this was taken. But they discovered these ancient ziggurats starting in the mid-1800s. The picture on the right are clay tablets that are texts. That is written in cuneiform, the very first written language on Earth. If you want to know history where it begins, I would read these texts. Well, I can't. And over there is a library of them. And when you go from city state to city state, you discover thousands of these texts, anywhere from farming statistics to astronomy to the gods and the kings. I'm only interested in that. So those are the texts I brought to you on this website. But there's an example. There are tens and tens of thousands of these texts and artifacts. Okay, so of course he's got his temples, and there are a couple texts to Ninigasita. But nothing's going to tell you much about him. There's one that's got a one star. That's the Bell Bells, the Ninigasita. Read it if you have the time. But it's a one star. You'll learn a little something. Then we come down to Enki and Ninigasita assist Ninherzog with the fashioning, not creating. They did not create man, as we may think, just out of the dust of the earth, out of the clay of the earth, man was, boom, it's man. That's not how it happened. So here's Enki and Ninherzog being assisted by Enki's son, Ninigasita. And they go over it and over it in the laboratory. And Enki and his sister Ninherzog discuss and discuss and discuss. And when you put your cursor on one of these artifacts, the slideshow will stop. A brief explanation of what you're looking at pops up. Okay? So, but it blocks some of the view. So if you want to get a good view after you read the description, put your cursor on the other picture, and it still stopped. There you've got a clear view of the artifact. You can fast forward the artifacts, the slideshow, or you can reverse them. Try to make this easy. If you want to start it over from the beginning, because I did try to put them in some type of order, you simply hit refresh on your computer. That's a very interesting slideshow. Here you're talking about Homo erectus being changed through DNA, theirs, being modified and brought into modern man. Homo erectus all of a sudden is Homo sapien, and we are Homo sapien sapien. So Homo erectus becoming Homo sapien almost overnight, as far as evolution goes, that's a million years at least. It seems to happen historically. Overnight, man goes from caveman to living in a city that is organized pretty close to the way we organize our cities. And it has just about everything we have in our cities. They had everything they needed back then, I'll put it that way, to survive and create a worker race and have the burden shifted from their backs to man's. Next thing you know, they can't get enough men. So Adam and Eve have thousands of children. Next generation, thousands of children. Next leader, thousands of children. And so it goes until the population is large enough to where you can send a worker race up to the Garden of Eden and take care of the burdens of the gods there, such as tilling the fields and digging the canals and irrigation and all of these things it takes for a civilization topside. It's now been shifted the work to modern man. And the same goes for the mining. It is now the burden, the beast of burden, is modern man. And fashioned for the sole purpose of replacing Inki's alien gods in the mines. The workload was too long, too heavy. The gods complained, as I explained, and so Homo erectus turns into Homo sapien damn near overnight. Actually, it takes 50,000 years, but damn near overnight. So as you look at these artifacts, for instance, number 37, which is next to the picture of Homo erectus, number 37, you have the seal, you have the wet clay fired hot, so it turns into a rock, lasting thousands of years. The description is simply, Ninhursag and her brother Inki, seated. They're sitting in the laboratory. They're trying to figure out, how do we create this worker race? How do we do it? And it's all right there, and all these different symbols are in there. Some I understand, some I don't. And the ones I do, I show you on this website. So every one of these slideshows are there for a purpose. Here's an example. I kind of like this one. This is a picture, number 38AA and 38AA and number 60. They're the same type of artifact. And what you're looking at is Ninhursag with very, very beginnings of the establishing of the worker race. And these particular productive modified beings, they're failures. They can't do the work that's required, or they can't hold the urn, or they can't lift their arms, or they can't lift their head. I mean, they had problems. It takes 50,000 years. So as you go through this, you will see many artifacts of Ninhursag working with her nurses, Ninhursag working with her brother. This is a big-time effort trying to create a worker race. Many failures, many thousand years. And then all of a sudden, Ninhursag, such as in Artifact 41, Ninhursag lifts the baby, shows this infant, and says, I've done it. I have created the worker, the Lulu, the Adapa, we called Adam. I have created model man, and model man will produce and reproduce many workers for us. And that's how it goes. And Enlil says, we'll take model man up here in the Garden of Eden, and his only job is to reproduce. And the first son that they reproduce, Abel, they say, hey, man, you're going to be taking care of the sheep for us. Next son, Cain, you're going to take care of plowing the fields, and so on and so forth. Then all of a sudden, Inky starts getting some help. Then all of a sudden, they're everywhere. And you have cities developing under the ziggurat houses of the alien giants that came down. One after another, between the rivers Tigris and Euphrates, in southern Iraq, and a little in Syria, and also Turkey, and also Iran, you know. They grew, but it started in southern Iraq, the Garden of Eden. So, very interesting slideshow. You'll see many artifacts of Nin-Herzog with her new baby, sometimes in the lab, sometimes by the tree of life with female organs, male organs, what have you. They're giving you the scene. This is an event. It's a big event. They recorded it and passed it on for all time, but very much hidden from us the last 2,000 years. Very much hidden. Okay, next you come to Inky and Nin-Gazeta, fashioning modern man, the texts that talk about it. Here's a little quick little quote from Genesis. I guess it's 126. I don't know. That's an estimate. It says, let us make man in our image according to our likeness. Please tell me, this is indeed in our Bible, in the Torah. Can you tell me who is us that's going to make man? Who is our image? Who is our likeness? Who are the sons of God that came down from heaven and had sex with the daughters of man, producing children, Nephilim? Who are they? The Bible tells you about it, but they tell you nothing else. Here I'm telling you who they are, what they look like, what they did, all the information that should be taught in schools that's been hidden instead to gain power and control over you. Okay, so here we go, Inky and Nenma. Man, I give that a triple star. If you do anything, read that. That's a must, and I mean that. Next, Adapa, we're talking about Adam. You can check it out on Wikipedia if you like. And I'm nice enough to give you a link to that. Anyway, next text, besides Inky and Nenma, is a text called The Tablet of Adapa. Good God. That's a triple star. I definitely advise it. There was another version, I guess a rewrite, or just simply another version. It's Adapa and the Food of Life. Again, a triple star. If you want to know about Adam and how things began, I'm actually giving you the details of it. That was given to us by the alien gods themselves. Now, they did not make these historical documents and make all these artifacts for nothing. There was good reason. They knew what they were doing. They knew the way they were doing it. They knew why they buried it, why they made it, and when we would start to question all this. Man, oh man. Oh, by the way, if you look at artifact, say 51, from the slideshow, Angusita and Anki assisting in Herzog, okay? This is a black and white. It says, all come to witness the momentous event. The worker gods will soon have replacements. Who can believe that? They've been here for hundreds of thousands of years with no replacements and damn few women. Only those related to the king. That's the only women they got. All that time and all that heavy work. They did give themselves a lot of beer, but all that work and few women. Anyway, they no longer are in the mines or in the fields. They're there as managers. And the work they did, you gotta take your hat off to these guys who established the colony that we now enjoy. What a planet! It offers everything, doesn't it? So this is I wish I could make it a better artifact presentation, but here it is. They come to see what Enki has created. And you see Enki with the water coming off and him and so forth. Anyway, these artifacts, no one would believe any of this without the texts and the artifacts. And wow. So the truth is more fantastic than the fiction. So here, these texts, these four, these three texts, I recommend so strongly. I mean, you have to read them to understand anything about the true Adam, the true beginning of us, our true history. Okay, next is Ningazita helps Enki save Noah. Holy good God. Enlil decides that he's had it with the mixed breeds. At that time, the mixed breeds are living thousands and thousands of years, tens of thousands of years. Mankind was not meant to live that long. But nice to have a worker race that does. Anyway, Ningazita helps his father save Noah, who lived hundreds of years. Noah's the first 10 generations of the Bible, from Adam to Noah. They all married their sister, their half-sister, and if they don't have any of those, they married their first cousin. If they don't have that, they don't have an heir. So if you're an important god and related to the king and you need an heir, you're going to marry your sister or your half-sister, and she will be your official wife. Whether she's the one you love or not, she is how you produce an heir. And that is called the Anunnaki. It's the law of succession. In order to be the next king, you have to be of the bloodline of the king and the king's sister. If you are, and Enlil is, you're the heir. If you are not, Enki being older, but his mother is a concubine to the king, so Enki is not in line for the succession to kingship. What a screw job to Enki. And boy, does Enki's son, Marduk, have a problem with it. Before any of this happens, you've got Ningazita and Enki figuring out, how do we save mankind? Because Enlil's going to kill them all by taking an asteroid and start throwing them into the oceans. and create a tidal wave that just simply wipes out everything. Huge tidal wave. And of course, you're going to get some rain, like the Bible says. And, you know, you have the bird that they let out to see if it can ever find land. And all these things. Read these texts. You will see the actual text here when you see Ningasita helps Father Enki save Noah. As you go through this, and you can fast forward, as I said, you're going to see the things related to the story of Noah. Artifacts. We're talking very old artifacts here, talking about the event of Noah's flood, brought on by Enki to wipe out all mankind, and brought on by Enlil to wipe out all mankind that was brought to the existence by Enki. Well, Enki doesn't want all of mankind, especially his son, Noah, who is a giant mixed breed. He doesn't want him dead. He doesn't want mankind wiped out. He doesn't want to put his people back in the mines. No way. Enki won't go for it so quietly, even though he agreed, they all agreed, we're not telling the earthlings, we're going to wipe them all out. They all knew when to blast off and save themselves. But Enki and Ningasita very quietly saving the species by taking the life essence. We're talking about a fertilized egg or unfertilized egg and what it takes to fertilize the egg. You just simply put these things in a petri. We do it today. We, as a matter of fact, we have doomsday petri dishes in case the animals are wiped out. We can restart them. And we get that idea from this. So it wasn't take a bunch of animals and put them on a boat. No, they took what they needed to eat on that boat. You betcha. They took what beasts of burdens they would need to move the objects that they need to move. They took what they needed. The rest of it were in petri dishes, thanks to Ningasita. So, next thing you know, the lion is saved, the elephant is saved, and so is mankind. But again, they're giant mixed breeds. Noah. So Noah, I guess, is around for 400 and some odd years. His father, grandfather, and so forth before him, they're around 1,000 years. The first 10 generations down to Noah, I told you what they marry. They do that to keep the bloodline of the gods within their heir. If you keep the bloodline going, all the benefits that this particular mixed breed has, his son will have. He'll be taller, stronger, smarter, faster, and live much longer than the earthling, and be appointed to a position of authority over the earthling. Noah doesn't want to lose that, neither did his predecessors. They don't want to lose that advantage. So Noah married his first cousin. No sister, no half-sister. And so the first 10 generations in the Hebrew text, that's what they did, copying the Anunnaki law of succession to the throne. Here we are with kings protecting their bloodline the same way as a mixed breed. The advantage isn't that of the gods, but it is that of the demigods. so I keep it as long as I can. So after Noah, the next 10 generations down to Abraham did the exact same thing. They married their sister, half-sister, or first cousin. You can check that out. So here comes Abraham, whose sister Sarah can't produce an heir. She's 100 years old before she gets pregnant. Well, if you're a giant demigod who lives a very long time, that's possible. You can have lots of children when you live 1,000 years. So anyway, you're talking about, here we go again. They have to repopulate. Noah saved the species of animals. I guess they probably lost some. I don't know. But they're saved. The mixed breeds, half horse, half whatever, those are gone. The earthlings are gone. We got to start over. So Noah has three sons. Enlil says one of them's going to the Garden of Eden for the farming and so forth. One of them's going to take care of the animals, and one of them's going to the mines. And again, mankind, of course, their wives go with it. And population of the earth begins again simply because Enki grabs his brother when his brother Enlil discovers Noah survived, and they're arguing like crazy. Enki says to his brother Enlil, the colony commander, "Who's going to do the work now that you killed them all? Are you going to plow the fields? Who's going to do the work? Are we going back to the old days when we're stuck here for thousands and thousands of years in the mines? What did you do, Enlil? Whether you like it or not, I saved him, and we're going to start over." So Enlil takes two out of the three, and they start over. This is a very interesting story. It is your history. And believe it or not, Abraham's married to a giant mixed breed sister of his named Sarah, who gets pregnant at age 100. Now, this is where the three main religions begin. Under Noah, the first son he produces is with his wife's slave or servant, whatever she is. Sarah can't produce the son and heir, so she gives in and says, "Here, take my servant, see if you can get an heir from her." He does, and the son comes out. They call him Ishmael. And Ishmael is just, you know, loved by Abraham and well known, because Abraham, by God, is the leader and a giant mixed breed. Very important figure. So here they are with Ishmael, not quite the way not the way you inherit the double seed law of succession. But he's got a son, he's got an heir. He's about 10 years old when Sarah gets pregnant at age 100 and produces a son they call Isaac or Isaac. The minute that Sarah, the sister wife, has her own son, produced his heir, she says to him, "Our son is born of the double seed law of succession. Ishmael is not born of the double seed. Ishmael and his mother must leave immediately, and Isaac will become the next hero of old men of renown." And so the Hebrew line goes down through Isaac, and Ishmael ends up the bloodline that goes down through the Arabs and creates, eventually, the Muslim race is through that. The Christians, through Abraham, through Ishmael, the rejected one, makes them mad. Next is, God, what was I talking about? I'm sorry. So they got to Isaac. Isaac, they test Abraham's loyalty to God. He passes. Isaac starts the Hebrew. And through the Hebrew, so many years later, Jesus is brought about through the bloodline. The very bloodline of David. David, the first king, what was his bloodline, and truly follow it back. Otherwise, there'd be no interest in David, or so forth, or Solomon, and so forth. But anyway, here you got artifacts of the flood. There you have knowledge of Noah, the way it was. And the texts are right here. Good God, look at the three-star texts. The Eridu Genesis. Oh, my God. So important. That's why Ningazita's page is so important. You have so many three stars on this page. Please read them. You'll be glad you did. This is Noah's flood here you're reading about. Okay, next, you'll see Ningazita's symbol, the double entwined serpent, or the double serpent, or whatever the hell it is. And for instance, artifact number 38, that's an old artifact. You're talking about the royal scepter with wings, meaning this bloodline of the king can fly, or has the ability to hop in a vehicle that flies. That's what it means. There's no wings on this individual. Anyway, you've got the wing to tell you he flies. You got the staff to tell you he's of the royal family. You got the double entwined snake to tell you that it's Ningazita. And later, you find out these things turn into our medical logo. Easily described, the royalty is in the crown above. The wings give you the idea that he's an alien god. The double snake, again, that's the symbol of Ningazita. So here you look at it over and over and over. And by the way, what this means is the double helix strand of DNA. That's the double entwined snake. So we're talking about a DNA specialist when we're talking about Ningazita, okay? And here's all these different artifacts from all different places with Ningazita symbol. Sometimes Ningazita himself. All right? Next one is Ningazita symbol with just maybe one snake. That's got horns on it, or it doesn't have horns on it. The snake god is Ningazita. And as you scroll through these, you fast forward if you wish, you'll find something very interesting when you get to, let's say, number 20. This looks like someone with a beard is in a flight suit. And that someone is a serpent god. Put it together, and you're looking at the ability to fly and god Ningazita. Now, do you see this thing he's holding? This is found in South America. But the thing he's holding goes back to Mesopotamia. What that is, I can only say it's probably alien technology. And what you see up there by his head, believe it or not, that's a monitor. Look at it. So you're talking about alien technology they do not and never have wanted you to know about. And when they talk about UFOs, they always talk about speculation and they laugh at the guy who says he saw one. Look what they're doing. They know what they're doing. And it ain't good for you, believe me. The truth will set you free, someone said. So here it is. I bring it to you and I try to give you the whole story of the gods from Mesopotamia who became the gods from everywhere. Viking, Mayan, it doesn't matter. Roman, Greek, it just doesn't matter. It's the same gods from Nibiru who colonized the earth and brought about man as a worker race and decided they would help man once man gets to survive. Thank you, Enlil, and thank you, Inky, for saving us. But once man is allowed to survive, they help us advance. And they modify our DNA some more until we are now Homo sapiens sapien. And we have all these artifacts so we can learn about ourselves, our own history, which involves gods from another world. Don't let it scare you. They didn't hurt you. They helped you. And we are in their image. So why would you criticize the gods that look like you and fashioned you and has looked over you since you were born so many thousand years ago? Now, the other aliens that come to Earth do not know. But they never, you know, I know they're here. I just don't know their purpose. I know they haven't hurt us. They may have kidnapped us. They may have even impregnated some. Don't know. A lot of DNA on Earth. I can tell you that. And how can they get to Earth, which is the Anunnaki's colony? It belongs to the Anunnaki. So how does a gray get to Earth? With that, the Anunnaki saying, come on in. Should we be afraid of the gray if the Anunnaki let them in? Or did the Anunnaki try to fight them off and they all got killed by the grays? Well, I don't believe that. I just believe that all these aliens are far more advanced than we are. We are the primitives. They fear us. That's why they keep their distance. And that could be why they're out of sight. No longer. They're visible everywhere. So, Nenga, Zetas, Mayan, and Aztec civilizations, you got the same deal going on. You got launch pads, landing pads. You've got ziggurat housing. You've got kingship. It's the same thing. Only now the blacks from Africa are actually the browns and become the browns in South America. It's all under Inky and Inky, the DNA specialty of modifying man. And when the Mayans just disappeared, could that be Nenga Zeta again, just picking them up and moving them somewhere else the way he did the Olmecs, the blacks from Africa? Did he just pick up the browns and move them to Mars or someplace? Because they're gone. Where'd the Mayans go? So the people wonder, and I guarantee you whatever happened, happened under Nenga Zeta's direction. This is his domain. These are his architectural structures. These are his civilizations. So, many artifacts, many very interesting ones, such as number 48 from Colombia, many things that fly. These are thousands of years old models of flying airplanes. Wow. These artifacts have been copied into wood and then tested for flight. Every one of them fly. Every one of them get lift. Every one of them are stable. Every one of them fly. And, you know, you're looking at the pyramids, it's the same type of construction. And you look at, say, the Olmecs, you'll find some in spacesuits. Spacesuits. And some of this stuff you find in Colombia, Ecuador, wherever. It's all over the place. It's all over the world. Aztec drawings in Peru. All these things come from the Anunnaki. All these things happen tens and tens of thousands of years, hundreds of thousands of years ago. We showed up, who knows? It took 50,000 years to do it. Maybe Adapa showed up, who knows? Many thousand years ago, I can tell you that. It's been tried to add it up. Well, they think it was 6,000 years ago man began. God created the earth and then man 6,000 years ago. Well, we know that's not true. And 6,000 years ago, that's 4,000 B.C. Yes, there sits Mesopotamia, 4,000 B.C. with these artifacts and these gods who came down. So it takes a while to get man going, but man's going. Well, how many B.C. is it? Who knows? Because the first ones were living many thousands of years. Look at the, go to a city-state and look at the one that says complete list of kings, and you'll see the kings before the flood and how long they lived. It'll blow your mind. And then man, God decided man will not live this long after the flood, and man's life becomes 1,400, 300, to, you see what I'm saying? To where we are today, as our bloodline gets diluted. Less and less of the God's bloodline. We still have their DNA, guaranteed. Okay, well, this gives you more information than you'll probably find, I'm sure, anywhere else. It's all combined for you. It couldn't be more important, in my opinion. I'm so happy you came to take a look at it. Please read the text. Please spend some time. Come back when you have time. Keep coming back. There's so much to look at if you're looking for knowledge. I want to thank you so much again. It really is good for me to know you come to see.